Buddy Bill Buckmaster, along with Bob Dio, Bob, my engineer and producer on the other side of the glass. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. Hope the week is going well for you. We're at our midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show on this, the 13th of February, 2019. You're listening to 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted local news and talk, our worldwide live listening. It's very simple. You can hear this program anywhere in the world if you've got a computer. BuckmasterShow.com has the live stream, and of course, KVOI.com. All of our programs are podcast. They're available 24/7 on my website, BuckmasterShow.com, 790-2040. During the first half hour of the show, we're going to be talking about weather and climate. Any questions concerning that area, 790-2040. It's been what I think is kind of a cool winter so far. Certainly, it seems it's been wetter than usual for southern Arizona. Of course, that is good news, but will it help relieve the nearly 20-year drought that we have been in here in Arizona? Zach Guido, Dr. Guido, is the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. Dr. Guido is the program manager and research scientist for the University of Arizona International Research and Applications Program and research affiliate at the Climate Assessment for the Southwest at the University of Arizona Institute of the Environment. Zach, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me again.
As we were explaining to some of my colleagues here at the Buckmaster Show, there is a difference between weather and climate.
There is. And, you know, a lot of people confuse the difference.
Mm-hmm.
So weather is kind of the ups and downs that we experience on a day-to-day basis. And those are predictable, out a couple days, out maximum maybe 10 days, but really 3 to 5 days is sort of the sweet spot for knowing what the weather is gonna be like. The climate, as a climatologist, we think about like the larger regional features that affect the day-to-day weather. So the climate is things that condition the weather. And so we think about it over longer term time scales, months to seasons to even decades when we talk about climate change. And they exert some influence on weather, but weather does happen, and that's basically the difference.
I would suspect, and I know that you looked into this before the show because you probably thought I would ask it, and I'm going to ask it. It seems like it's been a cooler winter than usual, and I'll go to my unscientific Zach Guido Buckmaster sweater index here. Yeah, Bob's
like
laughing on the other side of the glass. Well, I think I have to my name 4 sweaters in my closet. Bob showing me his jacket. He has a jacket index. I've got 4 sweaters in the closet. You know, when I grew up in Chicago and lived in Chicago, you can multiply that by about maybe 10. I don't know. But anyway, I have gotten multiple use out of each of those 4 sweaters this winter, where last winter, maybe the winter before, I don't know if I wore even each of them once.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I mean, I did prep for this because it's been in the back of my mind for some time now. And I, too, thought that this winter was fairly cold. And I think there's 2 things going on. One is like when you look at the statistics, like average minimum temperature, you know, since January, average maximum temperature, or just the average temperature, it's kind of right around normal. It's kind of right around the midpoint. And so you don't get really a picture that way. And sort of statistically, it hasn't been that much cooler. But I think we've experienced quite a bit of weather, as we were talking about before. We had a number of storms come in late January and February. And of course, when we have precipitation, it tends to lower the temperature. So we have seen quite a bit of cooler conditions, but those have been balanced out by periods where we've had warmer conditions. And we have had somewhat, I think in the Tucson area, we've had 9 days since October, 9 days that have reached a freezing point. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a lot. But as it mm-hmm. turned out, I looked back at the historical record, and on average, we get 16 a year.
Really?
But I think in the last decades or so, those numbers are less. And that's
right.
And that's because of the sort of warming temperature trend that we've experienced. So that 16 number is an aggregate, is an average over the historical record. And we had probably more earlier on in the 60s and 70s than we do now. And that, if you will, that's the sort of climate change signal that we're seeing in the temperature record.
Zach Guido is with us. It's 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. The name of the program is my last name. It's Buckmaster on 10:30. And, you know, I looked up just actually last night. I was curious about when the last frost that we would have here typically. The frost cycle in Tucson is actually mid-November to about St. Patrick's Day. I think it's March 12th that that we would have our last frost. However, historically, you could have that certainly into April.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've had snow here in Tucson in April.
Yeah, and those dates, the last frost date will fluctuate, and that sort of St. Patrick's Day is sort of an average. But what would cause those frosts? Usually our weather systems that would migrate down from the Pacific Northwest, down from the Arctic region, that would bring in cold air. And so you can have those in the spring, in the late winter, if you will. I think, you know, thinking about this in terms of statistics, recently we've just had less of those, and that the winter is sort of ending a little bit earlier, and it's warming up a little bit earlier. So if I had the data in front of me, I would hypothesize that the last frost date is becoming a little bit earlier in the year.
I would say that precipitation wise, we are, in fact, I know we are ahead of the historic average. We're close to 2 inches so far.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether or not that's going to make any difference as we get into the fire season, who knows?
Right. Yeah. So if we go back, let's just go back a few months and paint the picture here in the Southwest. October was a historically wet month.
Yes.
For us. That was fueled in part by some incursions of remnant tropical storms from the East Pacific. And then November was virtually dry. I believe maybe there was a little bit of rain that clipped the end of the month there in a few parts of Arizona, but it was basically dry. And then since December, it's been fairly active. You know, we've had periods in January, for example, where we were under sort of a high pressure ridge, and that makes it sort of warmer and drier than average. But you know, we've had a fair number of storms. December, I think Tucson, the airport, received about 150% of their December average. So I think an inch and a half. January was above average as well. So right around an inch and a tenth. And February, so far, and there's another storm on the horizon. I believe it's going to come in. It looks like it'll come in this weekend, or maybe even on Friday. You know, we've got close to 0.7 of an inch, and so when you add up all of those since December, yeah, we're doing quite well. We're above average. It's looking like February will be above average, and you know, and you know, then March, you know, sort of our precipitation dips some just historically, and then April, May, and June, it's like, you know, we'd be lucky to get some rain in April, and then May and June, it'd be I don't know what it would be. It would be very rare. So far, I, you know, precipitation wise, it looks pretty good, and I think that's a good indicator of maybe a later start to the fire season. But I think you have to sort of moderate that with the fact that temperature matters, and temperature is huge for fire danger and just overall drought conditions, because you have warmer conditions and it doesn't take long at all to dry out the landscape, and particularly for like grasses and shrubs that just take hours to, it you know, tens of hours for it to dry out, it's not hard to create fire conditions. So, you know, for the higher elevation areas, like if we can have the snowpack that's there stay on longer, then we reduce the duration of the fire season. But in the valleys and in the desert, you know, we're going to pay attention to temperature and how hot it's getting.
Dr. Zach Guido with us on 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. When we come back after the break, the world's most popular coffee species are going extinct, and scientists say we're to blame. So we'll find out what Dr. Guido has to say about this, because he does know a little bit about this, because he's actually spent some time in Jamaica with the coffee growers. In Jamaica has, Zach, as you know, Blue Mountain Coffee, which is one of the best valued coffees in the world.
It is.
Try ordering it at Amazon or online. A pound of Blue Mountain is going to cost you $60 to $70. Yeah.
It's extremely extremely expensive, yeah. Extremely high quality
Bob's
coffee.
Got his mouth open. He can't believe it. In the other control room there, he can't believe coffee could be that expensive. It is. Yeah, it's just very rare. But we'll talk to Zach about that and other things, 790-2040. Before we do that, Zach, you know what my favorite bakery in town is? Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Great time to go by right now. Have some lunch up at Mona's. Have a great sandwich. The bread, oh my goodness, wide variety of great breads that came out of the oven just a couple of hours ago. And I would top it off with one of those great chocolate chip cookies. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. And you can find out more about Mona's at monasdanishbakery.com. And on my website, buckmastershow.com, there's a link not only to Mona's, but to all of our great sponsors. It is 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll talk about coffee with Dr. Zach Guido after the break. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 ocean and beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2, tours daily, biosphere2.org. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To learn more, please visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
This is Moa Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. It's about 12:21 on our midweek edition on this Wednesday afternoon. Once a quarter, maybe every couple of months, we bring in Dr. Zach Guido. He's the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. We spent the first segment talking about the weather and some unusual things. Some areas of the country getting, like Seattle, record snow, snowiest February ever. I was pointing out to Zach before the show that a lot of folks up in Washington State, though, are complaining that the area of the Cascades of Oregon and Washington not getting what you would think would be a lot of snow, and that's important because of the fire season that will soon be upon us.
Yeah, every year there's winners and losers across the West in terms of snowpack and precipitation. And that's an area that you highlighted is less rainfall than others. But again, if you look at the broad picture of the West in the high countries of Colorado, Utah, the Tahoe region, and the Sierras in California have just gotten a lot of snow so far. And as you move further north, it becomes more of a mixed bag. There are still places in Montana and Idaho that have done quite well, but it's there are places that have not fared as well. But so when I look at the big picture, I sort of squint my eyes and try to pick out what the message is. And I think it's in terms of rainfall across the West and snowfall across the West, it's been a pretty good winter. Again, yes, there's winners and losers, but by and large, snow is in the mountains. That bodes well, I think, for water supply going forward.
It will be the temperature variable.
Now it's going to be the temperature variable, mm-hmm. and it's when now what we turn our attention to is how long will the snowpack stay in the high country?
Right.
And you know, if the trend continues, warmer springs, that snowpack stays less time.
Well, savor that cup of coffee while you can. New research shows 60% of coffee species found in the wild could go extinct. Researchers at the Kew Royal Botanical Gardens in London have been warning that climate change, along with deforestation, droughts, and plant diseases, are putting the future of coffee at risk. Zach Guido, Dr. Guido from the University of Arizona, has spent some time in the Blue Mountains of Jamaica, where some of the finest coffee in the world is grown. And this could be very troubling for certain, not only for coffee farmers in Jamaica, but people that love coffee, Zach.
Yeah, this is a topic that's pretty near and dear to my heart because I love coffee, mm-hmm. And I've had the opportunity to study it for the last 5 years, and I've gotten to know people in the coffee industry, predominantly in Jamaica and a little bit in Africa as well. And they deal with, as all farmers do, coffee farmers deal with a variety of challenges every year. And you know, when you look across many farmers, coffee farmers included, the challenges that they deal with relate to weather and climate being one of them, relate to disease pressures, and relate to market conditions. And each year, one may become more prominent than others. But to bring up the research that you mentioned, this is kind of scary. And it's scary because there's like two varieties that we drink that are cultivated. They're Arabica and Robusta or Robusta. And there's 138 others. And the challenge is that with this research that pointed out that close to 60% are imperiled because of changes in climate, temperature and precipitation changes, and also like deforestation. And what's important there is that those 138 varieties have the genetic material that can be used to think about adaptations or creating varieties that are perhaps more drought resistant or perhaps more resistant to other kinds of pests and disease. So I think this research was calling out that we need to think about these risks, and we need to start not just protecting them, but collecting them and monitoring them so that we can get ahead of the curve on this, because these changes, both human caused and natural caused, are changing the landscape of coffee.
75 of these 124 types of wild coffee are at risk of extinction. That's pretty dramatic.
Yeah, that's real dramatic. And again, it's like what we are set to lose is that genetic material that can then be, and I'm not a plant breeder and I'm not a botanist, so this is outside of my realm here, but it loses some of that genetic material that we can analyze and think about developing new varieties. And those are real strategies. So as an example, from my work in Jamaica, 2012, there was an outbreak of coffee leaf rust, which had decimated in that time cultivation across Latin America. And this has been a persistent problem across the world. And how Colombia dealt with it around 2008 was that they planted more different varieties. They ripped up 50% of their coffee plants, and it was a government program, and planted coffee leaf rust resistant varieties. And so the reason that we want to protect these coffee species is because we want to be able to continue to adapt and develop new cultivars and new varieties that can withstand these natural and these natural changes.
You know, that might be one of the reasons that Jamaican coffee is so expensive right now, because of that coffee, what is it, rust, coffee rust
coffee
disease?
Leaf rust.
Coffee
yeah.
leaf rust.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean.
And maybe just the fact that there's just fewer of the Blue Mountain out there.
Well, the price is interesting because it does command a very high price. It's, as you mentioned before, it can be some of the highest in the market. And most of the coffee itself goes to Japan. I think 80% of the Jamaica Blue Mountain coffee is exported to Japan. It's sort of like a niche product over there. And so they've, that demand, there's not a lot of it, as you mentioned,
right.
Sort of elevates the price. But I think one of the things that has been so striking to me is that even with high prices that Japan is paying, that the coffee farmers in the Blue Mountains are living on the margins. And they're not seeing as much of the profits as they need to. And, you know, they're a drought, a coffee leaf rust epidemic away from not being able to manage their farm. And this is a persistent problem across the entire coffee sector. Right now, I think the global commodity price is around $1 a pound. And it's causing a crisis in many coffee-producing countries. And most of these coffee-producing countries are, if not all of them, are in the developing world. Most of them are, not all of them. And the cost of production is somewhere greater than that. And so they're running at a deficit right now. And so when I mentioned before that the risks that these farmers face, climate being one of them, price being another, and pests and disease, right now it's price. And I really feel for these small farmers because they work incredibly hard, and it is just, it's a hard hand to be dealt.
They're mainly small farmers. There's not big cooperatives that are operating in Jamaica.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so by small farmers, there's like a technical definition to this. It's usually less than 2 hectares or about five acres. And that's like
a small operation.
It's very small.
Yeah.
There are farmers there that are larger farmers that have hundreds of acres. But the majority of the farmers, like 80% of the farmers in Jamaica, are small scale. And that is industry wide. The majority of the coffee that we drink is farmed by small farmers.
Yep. All right, Dr. Zach Guido, with the latest on one of my favorite coffees, Jamaican Blue Mountain, but a little pricey for the Buckmaster Show. I like Haitian coffee, too. Really, both Haitian and Blue Mountain are so mild. Another good one is from Papua New Guinea, but the thing with Haitian coffee, and I'll wrap this up because I've got two guests waiting, as I can see, in the ready to go on here. But the thing about Haitian, they just were devastated after the earthquake.
Yep.
They've just not recovered. So the amount of the Haitian coffee available is very, very limited at this point.
Yeah, that was a terrible occurrence as well. And just to bring it home a little bit more, Puerto Rico, after Hurricane Maria, a large fraction of their coffee plants were destroyed. So every year there's areas that are just devastated,
All right, Dr. Zach Guido, the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. Thanks, Zach. Always good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. It's 12:31. Eric Holton is waiting. He's from that wonderful group, the True Concord Voices and Orchestra. He'll be next on Buckmaster. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 Ocean and Beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org.
Hi, I'm Ryan Hansen, and we are excited to announce that our annual travel showcase has a new location, new presentations, and exciting new offers. Sunday, February 24th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Hilton El Conquistador, we'll have over 40 travel representatives offering a presentation and your chance to learn about where they go, who they are, and their exciting offers. I will also be presenting an unfiltered look at travel topics, so you do not want to miss the 2019 Travel Showcase from Bon Voyage.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hey,
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
It is the Buckmaster Show. One of our great sponsors is Green Things. Been around since 1970. They've expanded. They're on 13 acres. Not only Green Things for all of your amazing plants, trees, annuals, and more. Now you have Zocalo, which for years was over by Country Club and Broadway. Well, that whole operation with all that great antiques, fine art, handmade furniture, Talavera pottery, home accessories and gifts is now also on the Green Thing site. In fact, there's a whole Zocalo Village. There'll be an open house on Saturday from 1 to 6, Saturday, February 23rd. The Zocalo open house, more at zocalovillage.com or greenthingsaz.com. Coming up that same weekend, that's going to be a very busy weekend for Eric Holton, the music director of the Grammy-nominated True Concord Voices and Orchestra. Eric is with me in studio. Eric, how are you?
I am great, Bill. Thanks for having me.
February 22nd, the 23rd, and 24th, three performances, and you have selected... Kind of went out on the limb there, Eric. A very ambitious work.
Indeed. This is Bach's probably most complicated, sophisticated, but glorious piece of music that he wrote. It really completes for us the trifecta, if you will, because we've performed his B minor Mass and his St. John Passion. And this is the third in that grouping of works that are really his crowning achievements.
This is the St. Matthew Passion.
That's correct.
Yeah, and how? What was the time frame that Bach wrote these particular pieces?
So he was working in Leipzig in the 18th century. He arrived about 1723 in this position, which, by the way, you can't imagine a job like this today. He was in charge of music for not one church, but five churches in Leipzig. So he was balancing.
He was a busy man.
Besides
not just
having
Sundays, but every day.
Well, besides he had 20 kids. Yeah. So yeah, he was very busy. But somehow he managed to crank out all kinds of music. For a period there, he was writing a cantata every week for 3-4 years straight. But on Good Friday, that was a big deal in Lutheran Leipzig, because after a season of Lent in which there really was no fancy music at all, Good Friday was a time when the whole city would come together for a big production. And for this occasion, Bach set musically a couple of chapters in the book of Matthew that describe Christ's suffering and death. And so it was a big event. He pulled together all of his musical resources, all of his singers and his players that he's, you know, otherwise dispatching to all five of these churches on any other given Sunday. He brings them all together to do this magnificent work that would have occupied an afternoon for the city.
Eric Holton is with us, 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We're talking about Grammy-nominated True Concord Voices and Orchestra. A really highly honored a group that's based here in Tucson. And this is going to be, as Eric was just pointing out, a very ambitious piece. What makes it so difficult for your musicians and your vocalists to handle and interpret this piece of work?
Mm-hmm. Well, just in size and scope, it's really big. And Bach is a challenging composer anyway. I mean, he had very high standards. He was always complaining about his church choirs not being good enough. And I'm thinking to myself, well, maybe if you'd written a little bit easier music.
Yes.
But no, he was insistent that it had to be this way. It had to be at this particular level. And so his musical compositions are really the top of the top in terms of their excellence. And this piece, being a long work and a very sophisticated one, it presents challenges. It calls for not one orchestra, but two, not one choir, but three. So we'll be dividing the True Concord forces into two orchestras and two choirs. And we are fortunate to have the Tucson, Arizona Boys Chorus as that third chorus. The piece does call for a children's choir. So there's lots of forces involved. There's lots of notes, but just beautiful and memorable and stunning music, and a very dramatic depiction musically of this powerful and very famous and well-known story of 2,000 years.
What will your three venues be?
So we open in Green Valley at Valley Presbyterian Church on next Friday night at 7 p.m. And then we go to Catalina Foothills High School on Saturday night. It's a wonderful concert hall, 7:30 that evening. And then Sunday afternoon, we top it off with Catalina United Methodist Church at 3 p.m.
Are your team of musicians and vocalists, are they from all over the country? Or are they predominantly from here in Southern Arizona?
We use the best available musicians we have right here in Tucson, and we complement that with singers and instrumentals that come from all over the country. New York, Chicago, LA, you name it. They arrive on Monday afternoon, and we start rehearsing Monday, and we have three full days of rehearsals before we actually open in Phoenix. We've been invited to perform this work up at the, as part of the Phoenix Bach Festival. And so, we'll have our warm-up up in Phoenix, and then we open here in Tucson on Friday.
You mentioned the Tucson Arizona Boys Chorus. You have two other headliners you would like to mention, Brian and David.
Yes, yeah, so the main character, if you will, in this piece, it's like an opera, Bill. There are characters, there are arias, there are choruses. The main figure is the narrator or the evangelist, and he's the person who really has the burden of telling the story of that comes from these two chapters from Matthew. And then, of course, the other main figure is Jesus, who has a big part in this story, of course. And then the chorus has a big role, because the chorus is commenting on the story. They're participants in the story, either as the mob or as the disciples or as the high priests. It's a very dramatic role for them. And then sometimes they step outside of the drama and they comment on it, primarily in the form of chorales, or we might call them hymns, that the attendees back in Bach's time would have known and maybe even have sung along to. So chorus is a big part. And then we have 21 soloists all total, Bill, that are going to be singing the various arias and recitatives that comment on the story and personalize it, bringing it home to the here and now for the listener, whether it was back in Bach's day or even today.
How about tickets?
Tickets are available at our website, trueconcord.org, or by calling 520-401-2651.
What's the running time of this before? Mm-hmm. Particular performance? I mean, it sounds like there's so many different moving parts.
Mm-hmm.
What running time are mm-hmm. we talking about?
With intermission, it's about 3 hours.
Okay.
But here's the good news, Bill.
Okay.
We're not in 18th century Leipzig, because in Bach's day, between the two halves, there would have been an hour sermon.
Oh,
so
boy.
We're going to spare everybody the sermon, but the 3 hours are well worth it, because there isn't a sour note in this piece. It is from top to bottom, just excellent.
What else in your season is coming up?
So we cap off the season next month, March, with a pairing of two pieces, Mozart's Requiem, which is beloved by many and made famous by that movie about Mozart that we all love. And we're pairing it with a piece by Morten Lauritsen. He's a National Medal of Arts winner. He's the most performed living American composer today, and he's going to be here with us. We're wow. fortunate to have him work with our group on his Magnum Opus, his Lux Aeterna. It's a wonderful piece that complements well the sort of the fire and brimstone of Mozart in his Requiem. We get another more sort of subdued and peaceful and tranquil interpretation of the life hereafter in this Lux Aeterna by Morten Lauritsen.
So folks can find out more again at trueconcord.org.
Yes, indeed.
About ticket information for the upcoming Friday, February 22nd, 7 o'clock in the evening, Valley Presbyterian Church. The next day, 7:30 on Saturday in the evening, Catalina Foothills High School. And then the Catalina United Methodist Church will be the venue Sunday afternoon, the 24th at 3 o'clock. Eric Holton, always a pleasure to see you. Good luck with True Concord Voices and Orchestra with this very ambitious reading and performance of Bach's St. Matthew Passion.
Thank you very much, Bill. It's my pleasure.
10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. One of the big signature events of the year is coming up this weekend at the Tucson Convention Center. It's the granddaddy of all the gem shows, the 65th annual Tucson Gem and Mineral Society. The big show. We'll preview it right after this on Buckmaster.
I'm Brett Holland, president of Gecko Pest Management. At Gecko Pest Management, we believe the best defense is a good offense. We establish an undetectable zone around your home in critical areas where we know termites want to enter. When termites travel through this zone, they unknowingly gather and then transfer material to their nest mates that soon gets spread throughout the colony and wipes them out. Eliminate the colonies and there is no threat to the home. Here at Gecko Pest Management, we are proud of our Better Business Bureau A+ rating and the Angie's List Super Service Award. Visit us at geckopest.com.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. This portion of the program presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Just a 3-hour drive from Tucson. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. There you'll find a listing of great places to stay and all sorts of recreation opportunities in historic Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. That's a beautiful area of the southwestern United States. states, and specifically the southwestern portion of the Land of Enchantment. There'll be a lot of enchantment this weekend at the Tucson Convention Center. It's the granddaddy of all the Tucson Gem and Mineral shows. It's the reason we have the Tucson Gem, Mineral, and Fossil Showcase, because for 65 years, the Tucson Gem and Mineral Society has been presenting the Tucson Gem and Mineral Show. Paul Hartner is with us. Paul is a longtime spokesman with the Society and is going to tell us about this year's show. Paul, always a pleasure, sir.
Bill, thanks so much for having me today. I've always enjoyed visiting with you and sharing some information with all of your listeners, and we'll talk about the 65th annual Tucson Gem and Mineral Show this year.
Got a trivia question for my producer, Bob Dio. Bob, grab the mic right there. Bob, what do you think is the official mineral of the state of Arizona?
Copper isn't a mineral, is it?
No.
Copper is a metal. Copper is a metal. It is the official state metal, however. State metal,
but you have no idea.
I should know that.
It's wolfenite.
Wolfenite is the desert mineral. It was named the Arizona state mineral at last year's legislature after a lengthy campaign to designate a state mineral. We have state fossils. We have state gemstones. We have state birds.
State flowers.
But we didn't have a state mineral until last year, and the governor signed the legislation naming wolfenite as the Arizona state mineral.
And it will be the official mineral of the Gem and Mineral Show.
Absolutely. Wolfenite's a fabulous mineral. Before we got on the air, we were talking a little bit about the history of wolfenite. It was first discovered and identified by an Austrian whose last name happened to be Wolfen.
Huh.
And if you come to the show, I know there will be at least one Austrian wolfenite on display at the show.
Was this discovered in Arizona?
Discovered in Austria.
Oh, in Austria.
In the mid-1700s.
The mineral is found in certain areas of the world, or just...
All over the world. There'll be wolfenite from Africa, from the great mines in Sumeb, southwest Africa. There'll be wolfenite from Mexico, the United States. Iran produces beautiful wolfenite. China... it's a widespread mineral.
And what about here in Tucson? Where was it mined?
Oh, it's a fabulous story. There's a mine that is now encompassed in the Saguaro National Park. It's now a national park, not a monument anymore.
Right.
But the old Yuma mine is a place that all of us used to go underground and collect wolfenite crystals, beautiful orange wolfenite crystals. You'll see those in the old Yuma mines in the Tucson Mountains. It's off limits now, but in the old days, you'd drive to the west end of Cortero Road and hike up to the mine and collect wolfenite, and hopefully you had success.
Can you describe this for the type of wolfenite found in Arizona? What are the colors, or are there a wide variety of colors?
Wide variety of colors, from intense red at a mine on the Colorado River, the Red Cloud Mine. You have beautiful orange wolfenite from Tiger, Arizona. You have tans and brownish wolfenite from the Defiance Mine near Gleason. You have beautiful orange crystals from the old Yuma mine. You have yellow wolfenite from the Hilltop Mine in southeast Arizona, or the Padre Kino in Yuma County. So you have all of those colors. You don't have blue wolfenite from Arizona. You don't have green, but you do have those colors.
Isn't
from other
interesting?
Locations.
Isn't that interesting? You do have certain colors. That's very interesting. It has to do with, I guess, the geographic formation of the earth, right?
And that, and the trace elements that contribute color.
So much to learn about minerals and all of that. And I know, Paul Hartner, you know lots about it. Tell us about this year's show.
65th annual show. Wolfenite is the featured mineral. We're at the Tucson Convention Center on South Church Street, Thursday through Sunday. The show opens at 10 o'clock each day. But you mentioned so much to learn, and that's really what Tucson Gem and Minerals Society is
about. It's an educational experience, isn't it?
You bet it is. One of the things that we pride ourselves on is junior education. The students from the University of Arizona come over and work with the very young kids to help develop an interest with the young kids. We have lectures throughout the entire weekend. So it really is a learning experience. And then, of course, there are the special exhibits, which give folks an opportunity to learn about particular minerals. And
from private and museum collections.
Private and museums. Our longest museum supported the Smithsonian Institute, U.S. National Museum, to private collections. And boy, there's some honeys that folks will see. When I left the Tucson Convention Center, they were lining up to start setting up their special exhibits.
So how many retailers this year, Paul Hartner?
250 retail dealers worldwide from all continents. And that's, again, back to education. This is a chance to meet people from all over the world, South America, Africa, Australia, China, Russia, Germany, France.
Is this still the show in the world? Top three, maybe, I guess, an interpretation, but certainly it's in the top three or five, right?
No doubt in the top three. Our friends from Munich would challenge and say their show at the end of October is the top show.
But this is certainly for the winter season, this is the show in the world.
This is the best show in the world. And really, the two best shows in the world are the Tucson Gem and Mineral Show and the Munich Show the last weekend in October.
How has the show been evolving, Paul Hartner?
Well, if you'll remember, and we've talked about this from time to time, it started out at the Helen Keeling Elementary School. As just a group of really collectors.
On some card tables.
And the cafeteria tables with a sheet on the table.
Yeah.
To now, we have 250 dealers from all over the world. It truly is a big production at the Tucson Convention Center with some very elaborate booths and dealers and the quality of the product. That's one of the things that we're particularly proud of is the quality of the product is very good. And most importantly, all of those 250 dealers have been vetted.
That's what I was going to ask you. Do you do a lot of vetting of who gets to have a table and set up?
You bet we do, because we want the best quality dealers, and we want the customers, the guests that come, to have the confidence that they're dealing with that reputable dealers, and the quality of the product is top shelf. So we do vetting on a regular basis, and not every dealer is always invited back.
Yeah, I wondered. You probably evaluate everybody after the show, don't
you? We have an evaluation process after the show to receive input and
from
comment.
From customer input, right?
Customers, other show committee members, to make sure that the dealers do maintain the level of standards that we think are important that we want to present.
What are your hours this year?
Open at 10 a.m. Thursday through Sunday, close at 6 p.m. on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 5 o'clock on Sunday.
I can't ever remember a show opening on Valentine's Day.
Very, very rarely, but yes. You know, as some of us would say, this is the best opportunity for guys and gals to come out and look for that special Valentine's Day present. Remember, guys, there are things for guys, and guys, there are plenty for the gals with the jewelry, absolutely beautiful jewelry.
Paul Hartner, always a pleasure to see you, Paul. Good luck with this year's show, the 65th.
Bill, thanks for having us, and we look forward to all of your listeners coming by and enjoying themselves for the day.
Thanks a lot. On behalf of Paul Hartner, Bob Dio, my engineer producer, I'm Bill Buckmaster. That's going to do it on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Coming up next, Steve Rivera with his sports show, Eye on the Ball. That is our next show on 1030, trusted local news and talk. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon and evening.